From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on November 13th, 2018, when Amazon confirmed the news that was reported that morning. The company had selected two cities to share its forthcoming HQ2, or second headquarters. Amazon had created a national competition, international even, with hundreds of cities submitting bids to lure Amazon and its promise of tens of thousands of jobs. One of the two quote-unquote winning cities was New York City, a section of Queens known as Long Island City. Immediately, journalists and taxpayers wanted to know what New York State and New York City had offered Amazon by way of incentives. The bidding had become, in some parts of the country, rather ludicrous, with lavish offers and promises of non-existent taxes forever. Well, New York State had used several strategies to convince Amazon, including performance-based direct incentives of more than $1.5 billion, total package around $3 billion. That was based on whether Amazon fulfilled its promise of 25,000 jobs. And that's how most of the New York incentive package worked. Amazon would have to meet its promises, and then its tax bill would be significantly reduced. The opposition fired up quickly. It was led by a number of elected officials at the local, state, and federal levels, including incoming member of Congress Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They argued that Amazon was benefiting from extortion and that CEO Jeff Bezos had already established a reputation of paying workers poorly. They wanted the deal scrapped, and polls showed that a solid majority of New Yorkers disagreed. They wanted Amazon, and they supported Amazon's arrival. Well, last week, Amazon announced they were pulling out of the New York deal. Too much opposition, too much heat, the company said. Ocasio-Cortez and her supporters declared victory. Governor Andrew Cuomo was furious and said that the lawmakers who protested Amazon should be held accountable. The Amazon story has exposed a kind of rift in Democratic circles in particular, with many Democratic leaders like Cuomo and Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren supporting incentives to companies like Amazon, while other Democrats like Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders argue for an entirely new approach to economic development, one devoid of taxpayer support for already wealthy companies and corporations. This hour, a conversation about what happens next. Should cities relaunch the effort to lure Amazon? And are Democrats shifting their views on what's appropriate when it comes to economic development? Our guests include Jeremy Cooney, former chief of staff for the city of Rochester and recent Democratic candidate for New York State Senate. Jeremy, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be back, Evan.
Also with us is Alfred Vitale. Alfred Vitale, my goodness. How many times are we going to do that?
It's okay.
I'm sorry, Alfred. Alfred's co-founder of the Association of Working Class Academics. Alfred, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Karen Vitale, co-chair of the Rochester Area Democratic Socialists. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And on the line with us is Nicholas Wilt, former principal engineer for Amazon. And you might have seen his work before, well, before the decisions were made in the creation of an Amazon in Rochester website as a way of sort of cheerleading the effort there. Nicholas, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
All right. I want to ask all of you how you feel about the news first and foremost. I'm going to start with Jeremy Cooney because you wanted to be in the New York State Senate. You narrowly lost your elective bid there. Governor Cuomo pointed directly to the New York State Senate, among others, and said, if you opposed this Amazon deal, you ought to be held accountable, and this is a disaster for New York. How do you feel about it?
This is a story, Evan, of missed opportunity for New York. There are no winners or losers, per se, in terms of individual senators or lawmakers. In my opinion, this is a lose for New York. What we did last Thursday is we heard a shot around the world. And that shot said that New York is not ready to have a serious conversation about economic development deals that produce good-paying jobs for hardworking New Yorkers. And whether we're talking about an environment here in upstate New York or whether we're talking about Long Island City in New York City, we need to have a real, honest conversation about where we go from here in terms of bringing jobs and being competitive as a state of New York when attracting employers.
Was this a victory, convincing Amazon to not come here? Was this a victory?
No. No, I mean, the loss of 25,000 jobs, a loss of $27.5 billion in state and local economic incentives over the next 10 years, that is nothing to celebrate. Now, there are opportunities to learn from this unfortunate loss of Amazon. But I do think this is not something that we can gloat or celebrate when hardworking New Yorkers have missed out on an opportunity.
So if this is a missed opportunity, who is most to blame?
I think this is an equal share between Amazon and lawmakers, I would think this is really a communications issue, Evan. The fact that it was done through a non-disclosure agreement prohibited a real meaningful conversation with the community. Look, I understand local government really well, and a good community conversation that involves all levels of stakeholders, city council people, community boards, resident associations, state lawmakers, that did not happen. This deal was done in secret, and I know that's the way of doing deals in the past, but I think what we have heard moving forward, we can't do that again. We have to involve everyone in the community in making these types of decisions.
Karen, lost opportunity or victory convincing Amazon not to do this deal in New York?
Yes. It depends on both? Who you're talking to. Yeah, I agree with Jeremy that there are a lot of people who are ready to have a very serious conversation about what these deals look like and what their potential are. What we found in city after city and state after state is that the potential is for the rich to get richer and the poor to get poorer, and for corporate partners, in quotes, to back off on what they've agreed to deliver and to basically take the money and run. So what we have here is what Mayor de Blasio, who was still negotiating with Amazon when they pulled out, called an abuse of corporate power. So it seems to me that the non-transparency that Jeremy refers to is the terms that corporations have set for making these kinds of deals. And what we find is that they're going to pick up their toys and go home if we don't kowtow to those terms.
Alfred.
Karen is so much nicer than me in many ways. I think this exposes something. It exposes something very important, is that this is a very trend, even though it was done in secret. Amazon is a high profile company. The fact that this happened with them is a kind of a shock, it has some reverberations. I hope positively, in the sense that I hope every state, every city, every municipality says, no, you don't get to get benefits for doing the thing you want to do as a business already. I want to move a company somewhere. That's what I do. The tax problem, of course, when you talked about the incentive, and if they have to produce the 25,000 jobs, it's a merit. The problem is they can afford to be the penalizing. They can afford to be penalized on this. They paid zero in federal taxes. They made $11.8 billion or $11.2 billion in profit last year. Whatever tax sort of thing they get slammed with is not really going to make or break them in any way. So I think that's part of the other issue. The other thing I want to point out is it is about job loss, but Amazon has left a trail of destruction in industries that far surpasses the $25,000 jobs. I mean, by any estimate, anywhere between 100 and 500,000 jobs or more have already been lost. Some estimates say, up to a couple of million jobs are on target when they talk about retail outlets and groceries, et cetera. So
you mean that have been forced out by Amazon?
Forced out by Amazon. In fact, there is a death by Amazon index. Maybe you've heard of this. It's been around since 2012. And they look at 54 stocks, companies like Sears, companies like Macy's, et cetera, that may be impacted.
All right, before I turn to Nicholas Wilt, let me just follow that point there, Alfred. Is this a concern of yours when it comes to economic concentration, or is it a concern about trying to prevent what some would say is inevitable? In other words, we have the technology, the way we consume, our consumption habits are changing. Amazon benefits from that, but there would be a natural change in the marketplace. Or is this economic concentration where you think we can prevent that much concentration?
That's a much bigger question. I don't think it's about economic concentration. I mean, first, let's talk about Long Island City for a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Housing, as we all know, in New York City has skyrocketed. It's definitely difficult. Bringing 25,000 jobs there is not going to make it more affordable. Nothing about this deal is going to make the people that live in Long Island City necessarily, by default, have a better experience in terms of paying rent, affording to live there. Businesses, large corporations bring other sort of ancillary businesses with them, but they don't serve the community at large. I saw this happen on the Upper East Side. Nail salons, dry cleaning stores do not benefit the poor, for example.
And the reason, by the way, I ask about whether it's economic concentration or something else is some could argue you can call the death by Amazon index, but some would say, well, if it's not Amazon, it's somebody else, because this is inevitable given the way technology has changed our consumption habits.
But Amazon, it takes... Amazon can do a lot of the jobs that other companies are doing for a lot cheaper. That's actually part of the reason it displaces jobs. It costs half as much for them to do a certain...
So what do you do about that, is what I'm asking.
Well, you make them pay their fair share of things, for number one, and you don't sort of elevate them to special status when in fact they have destroyed industries. The book industry in New York City, for one of the largest industries, or it's that was the place where the book and the publishing industry had its sort of largest concentration. A lot of that got damaged heavily. So,
all right, let me turn to Nicholas Wilt, who worked hard on that Amazon in Rochester website, and I think it's relaunched. I mean, maybe in this idea that maybe Amazon would reconsider other cities once again. Nicholas, what's your first take on the news from Amazon? Were you surprised?
I was surprised. I thought that Amazon was committed to the project and they would move forward as planned. And it seems as if they weren't willing to engage in the conversation that was required with New York City. At a higher level, though, I think what happened is the it's almost like we've hit peak economic incentive. You know, there was public opposition to their HQ2 essentially request for proposals where they were soliciting municipalities. Show me what you got. You know, New Jersey publicly promised $7 billion in incentives for Amazon to reload there. And Amazon did not announce a decision to go to New Jersey. You know, we were offering billions, and the area where they are still committed to developing offered a lot less than we did. So I would echo on the one hand, the point that companies are going to do what companies are going to do. Why should they be rewarded for a decision-making process that would not be influenced by the incentives? The incentives just seem to wind up being money in the pockets of these corporations. And this has been going on for a long time, and it's been happening for all over the country. Very recently, Wisconsin had the Foxconn deal. I think that was $4.5 billion that was promised for Foxconn to move manufacturing operations to Wisconsin, and they just pulled the plug on that. Even 10 years ago, the city of Rochester gave $1 million to Nothnagel to relocate their headquarters from a suburb to Rochester. And although there are clawback provisions on paper, I think the record of actually pursuing those has been spotty. And there's been a growing public awareness of the problematic nature of these economic incentive programs, putting taxpayer dollars where they or incurring opportunity costs where money could have been spent elsewhere. The lack of transparency, I would echo Jeremy's point that I think that was very problematic, and it informed Amazon's exit, because had they had the very public conversation that started to happen once they announced a plan to move forward in Long Island City, that resulted in some public hearings where I don't think the conversation was going in places that Amazon was comfortable with. So if they might have made a different decision if they had engaged in that more public conversation earlier. And the lack of transparency was not unique to New York, but New York was fully bought into a complete lack of transparency. You know, I participated in helping to contribute to the joint bid that we did with Buffalo. I disagreed and committed, as an Amazonian would say, to the idea of a joint bid. I'm not sure that was a good idea. But once they submitted the bid, I asked for a copy. You know, I was like, I helped you guys. I consulted on this. I told you guys, you know, exactly how I thought it should look. And they wouldn't even give me a copy. And I asked for I offered to sign an NDA, and they still wouldn't give me a copy. I consulted an attorney, not seriously, because the stakes, you know, New York sunlight laws are not as good as the ones elsewhere. And he thought the document would probably be foilable, but who's going to file that lawsuit? And, you know, the benefit of that would be to finally get your hands on this document that Amazon decided not to pursue anyway.
Sure.
So there's just so many different angles that we could discuss. I don't want to talk about today the extinguishment of jobs through technology, you know, where Amazon's business practices and the combinations of technology that they bring to bear can result in net job losses in some areas. But, you know, as a technologist, I'm not sure that's always a bad thing. But in terms of the economic incentives and the fact that Amazon didn't steer their decisions to maximize their dollars there, the lack of transparency that caused, you know, a belated decision to walk away from Long Island City. And, you know, from what I can tell, there's a three-person panel in New York that would have to sign off on, well, they effectively have veto power on programs like this. So I don't think that Amazon could get the $3 billion incentives by steering the development toward Rochester, for example. But I never authored that blog with the idea that the incentives were the reason. You know, I just thought Rochester was a good fit and tried to explain that in the blog.
Jeremy, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just want to follow up on Nick's point regarding economic incentives. I think it's time that in New York State we have an honest conversation about how these deals are done. Look, I certainly understand and respect that there is a separate business need from that of the public need, meaning Amazon, in this case, has to be about profitability for its shareholders. They have to make business decisions in that regard. Now, they can be a good corporate citizen, right? And some of the things, if you actually dig into the memorandum of understanding that they had with the city of New York and the state of New York, they promised to do some really interesting things, including setting up a school for high-tech jobs for 600 seats for students, including an incubator for a tech startup, including a job training program. I think it's $5 million for a job training program in the nearby public housing project, right? So those are examples of some good qualities that corporations can do. But again, at the end of the day, it's about three letters, ROI, return on investment. And the way I look at this, plain and simply, is that there was an input from the state of New York of $3 billion, $500 million in cash, the rest through the performance-based tax incentives we talked about at the top of the show. And the output over 10 years was $27.5 billion. Now, listen, we have a problem in New York State with our budgeting. We're about $2.5 billion in deficit right now. We have to figure out a way to make our state government more fiscally responsible.
And can I, on this point, this is an important point where I've heard a lot of either disagreement or perhaps misunderstanding. So let's make sure we hit this point. And I want to listen to what, for example, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said following the announcement by Amazon, we're not coming to New York. Here is what Ocasio-Cortez said.
I think it's incredible. I mean, it shows that everyday Americans still have the power to organize and fight for their communities, and they can have more say in this country than the richest man in the world.
What do you say to those that criticize them pulling out, that, you know, the district now is going to lose 25,000 jobs that could have come there?
Well, one of those things is, A, we were subsidizing those jobs. So for the city was paying for those jobs. So frankly, if we were willing to give Amazon to give away $3 billion for this deal, we could invest those $3 billion in our district ourselves if we wanted to. We could hire out more teachers. We can fix our subways. We can put a lot of people to work for that money if we wanted to. Additionally, those jobs, there was no guarantee that those jobs were for the New Yorkers that were here. We were looking at a deal that was not primarily putting the community first. And I think that we can absolutely come together to create an economic plan that actually invests in New Yorkers, in higher wages, and in a dignified life.
I want to key in on one important part of this, because the current chief of staff for the city of Rochester, Alex Udelson, has had a lot to say about the line. And he says he respects and likes Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, new member of Congress. But when she says we were willing to give Amazon $3 billion, what Udelson says is, no, now we get nothing. He said Amazon was going to bring New York State $27 billion, and we were going to cut their bill from $30 billion to $27 billion in taxes. Now we get nothing in taxes. We're not giving away anything. There's not a pot of money that we can give to the teachers as Ocasio-Cortez. There's not a pot of money to give to childcare or other programs, as the new member of Congress says. There's just nothing. And Udelson is making the point, Jeremy Cooney, that she doesn't get it. Do you agree with it? And again, I'm kind of paraphrasing, and I know he has had generally nice things to say about her, but in this case, he thinks that the opposition in this frame is missing the point. Is that correct?
I think it's a bit misguided, right? Yeah, you can be progressive and have the values of worker justice that Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez has, but you can also be pragmatic, right? And there is no $3 billion sitting in a bank account that you can transfer to A or Y account, right? This is all about incentivizing behavior and then rewarding behavior when it produces the results that we think is in a public good. In this case, Alex Udelson is right that 25,000 jobs are now off the table, period.
Okay.
Also, these are...
Go ahead, Alfred.
But these are speculations. It puts the onus on Amazon to decide whether or not market conditions favor because of the ROI that you mentioned. So they have... The ball's in their court the entire time.
That's right.
That's one. Two, okay. To go to your point about them listening to the conversation, I agree completely. They should have had community constituents there. The problem is, would they act on the words of the community? In other words, who's valued more, the community's emphasis on this or the sort of the movers and shakers who stand to benefit, whether it's politically, as in the case of Cuomo and de Blasio, whether it's economically, whether it's developers and firms that will benefit off of the construction and things like that. So I agree, but this assumes that the democracy is flat, that the person who's making minimum wage is going to have a say in this, even though they've lived in Long Island City. I have a good friend who's lived there for 40 years in rent-controlled housing. Is he going to have a say versus...
I'm not minimizing the importance of that part of the conversation, but does Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez get something wrong when she says, hey, take that $3 billion and send it elsewhere? Because what Governor Cuomo comes back and says is, there's not $3 billion. We're going to get that from Amazon. We cut their bill. That's the deal.
Yeah, I understand that point.
Okay.
There's $3 billion from other places, though.
I also know that Amazon paid zero in federal tax dollars last year. So if the federal government were to make this kind of... Actually, they had a negative 1%. They got money back on their taxes from the federal government. So the idea that Amazon is going to generate... lift up people who are living in poverty by having, by the way, they're not doing a cattle call in Long Island City for those 25,000 jobs. They're bringing people from outside New York City that already have those jobs to move to New York City. That's part of why the rents go up for the people who live in that area, is that you've got high powered executives coming in to buy up real estate and to drive the cost of rent up. What we saw with Foxconn in Wisconsin is classic. They have incentives tied to producing jobs. They also paid out a bunch of money. So it's not all, the money is not all tied up in make this benchmark, we give you that money back. Make this benchmark, we give you that money back. And by the way, they don't need the money. Amazon does not need to get those tax incentive money back. But what Foxconn did is promise something like 13,000 jobs. And then they immediately, once the ink was signed, rolled it back and said, well, we're going to bring in foreign workers to take those jobs. Well, we're going to, we're actually using existing workers that already work for us. So they did not revitalize the manufacturing base. And Wisconsin taxpayers are still paying for that deal. And they've got nothing to show for it.
And by the way, Karen, and I totally agree with you, Foxconn deal was a total massive screw up. It was $4.5 billion for 13,000 jobs, right?
Yeah, it was $250,000 per position that they were supposed to create.
This is $3 billion for 25,000 jobs. And I think you have to look at each economic deal on its face differently, right? So Amazon is not the same company as a Taiwanese manufacturer in Foxconn. And I have some serious concerns about the history because I believe Foxconn fell through on another deal in Pennsylvania, right? So I think that there's a history of some business practices that were not confidence building.
Let's go closer. Let's go to Geneva, New York, where the Koch brothers bought the glass factory and then extorted extra tax incentives for the next 11 years out of the city of Geneva.
Yeah. There's not a lot of data that supports the idea that when corporations do this kind of incentivized moving, that it actually yields what not only just what they say, but that it actually has any kind of real positive impact in the long term. A 2013 report from the Institute of Taxation and Economic Policy. In fact, notice that it's really more likely to just reshuffle investment between geographic areas rather than bring in and increase current, you know, investment in that particular, you know.
But back to the economic argument, you're kind of following up on that, Alfred. If indeed, and I don't know, I don't think we gave Amazon a chance to demonstrate that they were going to hire locally. Now,
that's
I agree.
Because they picked up their toys and went home during the negotiation process this past week.
Well, listen, I think it's not Amazon's fault. I don't think it's the state government's fault. I think it's both. I think that there was a lack of communication and understanding and a lack of transparency, which led to confusion, misinformation, and a botched opportunity. Let me just follow up on my point about the hiring. Right. Of course, a certain number of the percentage of that 25,000 jobs was going to be either brought in or developed later on. But the fact remains is that 25,000 tax-paying earners would be in New York State, and we would diversify the economy of New York City, which has been over-reliant on financial services and Wall Street for far too long. And so, when you're thinking about the overall fiscal health of New York State, I'd rather have a stronger tech community be in New York City, which, by the way, has ripple effects up to us here in Geneva and Rochester and the Finger Lakes region.
Because it was some of that subsidy was state tax money, not just New York City tax.
That's
money.
Correct. Yes, yes.
That's
it was
the
both.
Ripple
Jeremy,
effect.
But the ripple effect is also the tax income. So we started to talk about this before, is that if we are in a budget deficit, which we know we have, right, we all are drawing from the same state pot, whether you're in the Finger Lakes region or whether you're in Long Island or New York City, right? And so when there are more dollars in the state government, we all ships rise, right? We have an opportunity for our not-for-profit, for our arts and cultural sector, for our state and local government to go to New York State and to ask for assistance. And we're seeing that right now play out in the budget process in Albany. But when we have a deficit, right, we have to cut programs and cut needed services to this community. So I think the lack of foresight in having Amazon contribute to the New York State economy is going to have ripple effects up here in Rochester.
The other thing you're missing, though, Jeremy, is the fact that there's no guarantee. It takes 1 hour to go from Long Island City to New Jersey. A lot of people move to New Jersey specifically and buy real estate there because it's about a third of the cost. So we can't guarantee even that the people who can live there, who have those jobs, are going to stay in the state at all, number one. They're certainly not going to stay necessarily in the five boroughs of New York City. So that changes a little bit, not at the state level, but certainly what impacts what, because the housing market in Long Island is going to be more ideal for the people at the higher tax brackets.
That's
what they do.
Nicholas Wilt, what's the biggest lesson that comes out of this? If you're in state government, and again, I know you're someone who kind of consulted with this working group that was trying to put together the Rochester Buffalo bid here. What's lesson number one to you to take out of this?
Oh, the lesson number one is to address the transparency problem. But I think it's also important to recognize that there used to be a more clear division of labor between government and business. You know, the Chamber of Commerce would represent business interests, and government would craft the best communities that they can under ideal circumstances, right? That's how it should work. But this trend, which to me, this has peaked, this was extraordinary. 238 different municipalities submitted bids to Amazon. And I think this was a catastrophe for Amazon. Probably not a net win for New York. I mean, it's complicated as we've seen, but we need to reinforce the divisions between government and business, you know, and we have examples of that conflation anywhere that we look. You know, the current CEO of the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce is a former mayor who doesn't have any business credentials that are ascertainable. You know, he was a police officer and a police chief before he became mayor. And that is exactly the kind of politics that progressives have been criticizing for decades. If there's one lesson we can take away from the whole HQ2 episode, I think it's that we need to re-embrace the idea that having business interests and government interests work together in the way that they were around the steel is intrinsically problematic.
So we did invite former Rochester mayor and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce, Bob Duffy, who is out of town and unavailable, but he did speak to WXXI and others last week saying he was disappointed in this move by Amazon, and that even though Rochester Buffalo didn't win the bid, having Amazon in New York State at all, Duffy thinks would be good for all New Yorkers. And he says essentially this is how business gets done. These incentives for business is how it happens in the current environment. Now, after our only break of the hour, I want to get more of your feedback on this. And some of that feedback includes one of our listeners who is has a dissent from my introduction, in which I said that in some ways this is a debate on the political left right now about what is appropriate in terms of economic development. Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, many others saying that this is the DSA saying that this is not how we need to do business, that this has not been good for the American worker. Whereas a lot of other, frankly, centrist Democrats, and whether it's Governor Cuomo or many others, saying this is how the game works, and we have to look at ROI, and this is how it's played, and we're losing an opportunity. One of our listeners says, no, let's talk about that. And we'll do that after this break, and we'll come right back here with Alfred Vitale, who's co-founder of the Association of Working Class Academics. Karen is co-chair of the Rochester Area Democratic Socialist. Jeremy Cooney, former chief of staff for the city of Rochester, recent Democratic candidate for New York State Senate. Nicholas Wilt on the line with us, former principal engineer for Amazon and administrator of the Amazon and Rochester website. We'll get your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, polls increasingly show that Americans find anyone who disagrees with them is likely to be ignorant or even evil. Why is that? Do you think people who support another political party, a different political party, are evil? Does that make them racist or sexist? After all, bias informs belief. Can we set aside bias? Can we change the way we think about those who disagree? That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. We're talking about Amazon's decision not to go to New York City, after all, for part of their HQ2. Dan writes to the program and says, I appreciate the discussion. It's an important one. However, please avoid framing the issue as a rift on the left. There may be Democratic Party members on either side of whether Amazon deserves to dictate how our cities operate, but the left is against public expense giveaways to the biggest companies and the richest CEOs. The left has never subscribed to trickle-down economics, which is what the deal and others like it amount to. The left sides with the working class over the managerial and political class as a rule. There is no debate about this project on the left. That's from Dan. Jeremy Cooney, do you agree with that?
No, I think it's too broad of a brushstroke to paint. I mean, look, I'm a Democrat. I am so proud to support worker rights. I believe that wage inequality is the root cause of so many social ills in our problem. But I also believe that good policies such as paid family leave, raising the minimum wage, these are democratic principles that can affect the workplace. But at the same time, there is, a practical component that comes into play here where it says companies, whether it's Amazon, Apple, it could be anyone, right? It could be a manufacturing company, right? When they come to communities, they have an opportunity to bring good-paying jobs for residents who are looking for meaningful employment. I mean, look in our own backyard here. We talked about Geneva before. But when you think about some of the software development, Livestiled, and you talk about a Cloud Checker or Datto, right? These are some of the recent investments that we've had in Rochester that have created jobs, bringing talent back upstate that are settling in Rochester and contributing to our local economy, right? This is a good thing. So I don't think it's fair to paint kind of all Democrats or all left-leaning people the same. I think we all have our value systems that can be tweaked a little bit, but I do believe that this is about making a good business environment for New York and specifically for upstate New York.
And in other words, Jeremy, you can be pro-worker and also in favor of the Amazon deal?
Yes.
Okay, Karen, can you?
it's problematic, and this is—I was actually going to ask you, Jeremy, why aren't part of the terms of this negotiation that Amazon pay a living wage, stop hiring itinerant temp workers whom they abuse? We're talking about people who wear diapers to work because they can't get across the warehouse floor in time on their break to go to the bathroom. We're talking about people living in the UK outside Amazon warehouses at Christmas time in tents because there's no housing around the warehouse and they can't afford housing on the wages they're making. There's such a huge divide. Amazon has such a terrible track record of workers' rights. They won't promise union neutrality if people want in their people who work for them want to unionize. That's one of the issues that came up in New York City. Again and again and again, they're paying low wages. They're hiring temp workers from agencies that they don't even count as Amazon workers. So when they tell you what they pay their workers, when they promise $15 an hour to the lowest paid worker, they're not counting the hundreds of thousands of people who are temp workers for Amazon because that helps their bottom line. So no, I don't think you can be in favor of this and say that this is a pro-worker situation where we're giving taxpayer money to Amazon, who treats their workers terribly.
And we have no real historical precedent to say that that is the case. This hasn't happened yet. We haven't seen a benevolent, large, I mean, any town in the region, 50-mile radius, you can go to and there may have been a factory. Foster Wheeler in Dansville brings them up. These are things that had provided good jobs until the ROI happens and until it becomes not profitable. The commitment is not to the communities that they're investing in temporarily. So I don't trust this. An MOU, a memorandum of understanding or memorandum of agreement, is not a contract.
Okay, let me ask Nicholas Wilt, who worked for Amazon. Do you agree with the critique, generally speaking, that the company has a very bad record of treating workers?
Yeah, it's interesting for me because, and I spoke to this when I was on the show talking about Amazon in Rochester, when I said, you know, these are, for me personally, there's a huge firewall or bright line between the kinds of jobs that they were talking about creating in Long Island City, the kinds of jobs that we had in downtown Seattle, the kind of job that I had, and working as a minimum wage employee in a fulfillment center. You know, the types of jobs they were talking about creating for HQ2 don't fall into that category. And I think it's entirely appropriate to have a broader conversation about their business practices. And, you know, it's a complicated set of issues. I am not sure it's a net win for New York to say, you know, you had ambulances parked out of that fulfillment center in Pennsylvania because there were no air conditioners, and people, if they fainted, they had ambulances on site to render medical aid to those workers. That's something that happened. I'm not sure saying, hey, so therefore we don't want your 25,000 jobs. If you want to influence a company's behavior in a way, you know, you want them in your city. And that may be why Amazon walked away. There were Seattleites, activists who came to New York to try to oppose the deal exactly because they don't feel that Amazon has been a good citizen in Seattle. They enacted, the city council actually enacted a head tax on employers to raise $50 million a year, $50 million with an M, to address homelessness. And this is in a place where 20% of Amazonians live in Seattle and they walk to work. Well, they're walking past people who are sleeping in sleeping bags on the sidewalk occasionally. You know, there is a well-documented horrific homelessness problem in Seattle. The city council enacted and then repealed a head tax that Amazon opposed because Amazon felt that that tax was directly targeted at them. And with more than 20% of the office space in Seattle being rented by Amazon. Amazon has an extraordinarily high percentage of the commercial space in downtown Seattle. It's not surprising that a tax like that would fall on them most heavily. And Seattleites who supported the head tax and wanted to address the homelessness problem in that way were very upset with how Amazon handled that controversy.
Yeah, Nick and Evan, before we get phone calls on what Nick has just said, that tax was not on small businesses. That tax was not on medium businesses. That per-head tax was on companies that had $20 million in taxable gross income. So what we're... And the highest per head that they would pay per employee was $275. So these are companies that can afford it. Amazon can afford to be a good neighbor. Amazon can afford to have unionized workers. They don't want them. And bringing them into your town is not going to, you're not going to make a moral argument with them and change their mind about how they set the terms of doing business in your town.
But can we just have an honest conversation about what the responsibility is and who the stakeholders are on each side of the table? I mean, there's a fiduciary responsibility of the leadership of Amazon to make profits for their shareholders. And we can like that or we cannot like that, but that is the system of our free market capitalist economy that we have. And you know that's what it is, and we could.
This
we could
is
so it's reliant.
You've got Alfred and Karen agreeing with you.
I completely agree.
It's reliant on government handouts, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, they rely on.
So they're
the
welfare cheats, right?
But my point is that is the lens that they're coming to the table with. And what is government coming to the table with? It is looking for services and opportunities for the citizens they represent. I don't think that there was either one of the good faith happening on either side of the table in this situation with Amazon, right? Amazon has to come and make a business deal that they feel is in their best interest, right? We already know that New York overall has a reputation for being unfriendly to business, having high taxes. It's expensive to do work and access the labor workforce in New York City. So the way that we offset that from a government perspective is to offer these types of tax incentives. Look, in an ideal world, we wouldn't be offering any type of tax incentive. But that is not the rules of the game that we're playing. Though that is the rules, excuse me, of the game that we're playing.
Well, the rules have been decided. Let's be frank. They haven't been decided by us. They've been decided by the people who profit from it. I mean, this goes back to the entire conversation I had last
time. So Jeremy's saying this is a reality within the game. You guys are saying change the game.
Change the game.
Yeah, change the game.
Do you want to change the game, Jeremy?
Yeah, why not?
Not if we lose 25,000 jobs.
Okay.
You know, was it a breach of fiduciary responsibility for Amazon to build a permanent Mary's Place family shelter in Seattle? You know, that is exactly, and by the way, the $5 million school they offered to build, those are exactly the kinds of initiatives that are better decided by the community than by the corporation.
Yeah, that's another point that writers like Anand Giridharadas make in his remarkable new book, which I think should be required reading, and we're going to try to get him on the show, that talks about philanthropy and the goals of philanthropy, but whether it's actually working or not. And so I think that's the point that Nicholas is making where, sure, you're going to build a school, you're going to offer training. Is that best decided by the corporation or by the people like Jeff Bezos, or is it best decided by the community or the government, et cetera. Before we get to your phone calls, one more quick point here. Because one of my biases that I want to make sure that is clear to everybody is, as a journalist, my bias is generally in favor of sunshine. I don't like when things stay secret. I would rather see the terms disclosed as much as possible. I do understand the argument that people like Bob Duffy made, Matt Hurlbut from GRE, who they also declined to come on the program today. I get why they say there's a competitive disadvantage to revealing your bid, but there's other places that did reveal their bid. And when we're talking about this much public money, I want to know what you're bidding. I do want to know. I think it's for the public good to know what you're bidding because some of you are in elected or appointed positions, not everybody. And I'd like to know if you're sort of handling bids that the public would decide is proper. In this case, we didn't have sunlight. And then when the details start coming out, maybe some people get some of the story wrong or et cetera. And then Cuomo and Bezos are surprised that people didn't get it. Well, you're not putting any sunlight in the process. Put sunlight in the process. Let people see what you're actually bidding. And then we can decide if we like it or not, as opposed to being sort of surprised later on. But I will challenge Jeremy Cooney on one more point before I get to your phone calls. I know you're agreeing with my point here, yep. But you're also indicating if we just had sunlight, people would have gotten this better. But when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is making the point, well, just give the $3 billion elsewhere, you're also arguing she's fundamentally misunderstanding how this works to begin with. I'm not sure how much sunlight would have changed that.
True. But I do think that there was because this deal was done in secret, right? And I think we're all around this table, and I think Nick too, we all are in agreement that more sunlight would be better than none. But the way it happened is it happened so quickly and it happened so secretly that no one had the full story. What the Congresswoman failed to understand is that there isn't, again, a pot of money that's set aside that can just be allocated towards this particular deal.
She also advocated for the 70% tax over 10 million. I mean, I think she does think there's a pot of money, and I think she's right. I think we just don't want to extract it because the people making the rules of the game are, in fact, the people who own corporations who pay zero in taxes. I mean, this is, I agree with you, except I think we're missing a fundamental piece, which is we're not deciding this. Mm-hmm. That's
all right, I've got to get.
You know, she has a degree in economics from Boston University. I don't think it's that she doesn't understand. I think that, you know, the soundbite that everyone is quoting is just doesn't have enough content to have the full kind of discussion that we're having on this program.
I think that's probably fair, Nicholas, because, again, I'm not selling Ocasio-Cortez short. She is a tremendously smart person, and she's already moved the needle quite a bit in her political career. There's no doubting that. I'm simply trying to understand when Governor Cuomo says she doesn't get it. That money doesn't exist. It doesn't sit in a vault that we're just giving to Amazon. I think Nicholas is making a more nuanced point that probably would bear its own discussion.
Then we in government have a responsibility to do a better job at explaining the process. And our elected lawmakers, whether you're from Rochester or whether you're from Long Island City, should be engaged in that conversation. That did not happen in this situation.
No, but he did say he'd call himself Amazon Cuomo. Which, by the way, let's have some dignity somewhere, please.
All right, Harry in Rochester on the phone first. Go ahead, Harry.
Hello, everybody. I have some questions about what the real reason might have been behind Amazon's decision to withdraw. I can't believe that any of their top 10 picks, whatever they were, they wouldn't have faced some opposition. It seems kind of odd that they haven't selected another site. Somewhere between the decision to have two headquarters and now, have they reassessed the situation and said, well, we really only need one headquarter. That's what suits our purposes now, and we can just use this as an excuse to get out of the deal and maybe season the ground for future places that might make bids on their choices.
Yeah, Harry, it's an interesting question. I mean, Amazon has all kinds of leverage. There's no question about that. Nicholas Wilt, can you keep it brief? Having worked for the company, analyzed this, kind of rooted for Rochester in your own way, what do you think the main reason Amazon decided not to go to New York City is?
I think Jeff pulled the plug. You know, he is the CEO. And their forward staffers, you know, had concerns when they were doing site visits in other cities about some of the things that they've seen happen in Seattle. So I think it came from the top. And, you know, some of his personal travails may even have informed it.
There's been some weird stuff going on with Jeff Bezos. A lot of people have speculated that. It's impossible to know behind the scenes, to be fair. But you're right. The caller is right. Amazon's got a lot of information about other cities. If they decided to go elsewhere, this whole campaign was pretty effective at giving them even more information. For now, they have not announced any plans to look elsewhere. So Kate writes to us and says, Evan, have any of your guests owned a business themselves? If not, they have no foundation from which to proclaim that any business can afford anything. Karen, she's responding to your comment.
Amazon can afford it. I don't need a degree in economics to know that. Their own press keeps showing it off. That's my answer. I mean, Amazon can afford it. I think it's ridiculous with, I don't know, what is it, $113 million in profit and they paid zero taxes?
It was 11 point something billion in profit.
Okay, 11 point something billion in profits in a single year, zero federal taxes. In fact, $129 million back in taxes.
Briefly, Alfred, go ahead.
I don't even.
You're looking at me like, yeah.
No. You know, you
co-sign on Karen's point.
I do.
Jeremy,
I of course co-sign.
You disagree?
I do disagree. Can I just zoom in on the federal tax issue real quickly? I do think it's worth noting here. So Amazon again is playing by the rules of the game. And if we want to change the taxation for corporations in this country, then Congress needs to do that. And I think that they should. As a Democrat, I believe that they should. The Congress lowered the taxable rate, corporate rate, from 35% to 21%, right? And Amazon got the benefit of that. And then through depreciation and write-offs, they were able to have a negative tax rate, as Karen alluded to correctly earlier. They are following the rules. I'm not making a value judgment on whether the rules are right. I personally believe that they are not right, but they are following the rules. They did not do anything
and
wrong.
And for that reason, do you disagree when people say it's immoral for them to do that?
Correct.
You don't think it's immoral?
They are following and doing what's best for the shareholders of Amazon.
It's a tantrum. The reason this is setting a precedent, and they don't like it. This is geese droppings on their lawn. They don't like it, and they will threaten to move because of it. And that's a thing. So one of the reasons Ocasio-Cortez is sort of becoming more, her prominence is sort of, it's growing exponentially, is because she and others in Congress right now are saying, you don't get to decide everything. You don't get your way all the time. And Bezos is throwing a tantrum here because logically, New York would have been the place to go.
20 seconds. What's the best path forward after the Amazon deal? What do you think happens?
I think the best path forward is to change the rules of the game, vote for true progressives who are going to change tax policy and tax the rich.
Okay. Jeremy Cooney, what's the path forward now?
We actually listen to the people who vote us into office. And if they need jobs, we need to find ways to give them jobs in a corporate and socially responsible way. There is no one formula that fits all. But I do believe that we cannot get on our high horses and miss opportunities when they come along.
And in this case, we missed one.
You got it.
And Jeremy, do you think the upcoming Democratic primaries are going to expose this rift even more and lead to more conversation like this?
I do, and that's a democratic process, and I welcome that.
Okay, and Nicholas Wilt, final thoughts on where you think Amazon might go next? And I know you've relaunched Amazon in Rochester, but that seems very far-fetched, doesn't it?
It does. And I think when I was on the show, I said I think we may have reached peak Amazon in Rochester at that time, but it seemed like an apropos time to reactivate the Twitter feed. You know, I think the two lessons to be learned are the transparency and the idea that the progressive opposition to revolving door conflation of politics and business maybe should be revisited. You know, Jeremy and I would have to agree to disagree. There are lots of successful businesses that were created without tax incentives.
And Alfred, by the way, to the extent that you view this as a victory to convincing Amazon not to come, did it surprise you?
No, actually it didn't. I think the tides have turned. Just enough to get that.
Interesting. I want to thank all of our guests for being here. Thank you for taking the time. Nicholas Wilt on the line with us, who's the administrator of the Amazon and Rochester website. Thank you, Nicholas. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And I promise a lot more discussion on these and related subjects ahead, because this is a story. This is just one story, one company, but it's a much bigger picture, and we will continue that discussion on Connections. We'll be right back with more Connections. Thanks.